Blog Talk Radio.
I would like to welcome everyone to our John Talk Radio special edition. This is June the 4th, 2016. The Timmons Brothers are my guests. We're going to be talking tonight about the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's, the legacy of an album. In 1967, upon its release date of June 1st, Time magazine declared it a historic departure in the progress of music. Newsweek called it a masterpiece, comparing the lyrics with classic literary works, and the New Statesman hailed it as an elevation of pop music to the level of fine art. By 2003, the Library of Congress had placed it in the National Recording Registry, honoring the work as culturally, historically, aesthetically significant. And Rolling Stone magazine ranked it number one in its list of 500 greatest albums of all time. This is Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Welcome to the show, John and David Timmons.
Oh, glad to talk to you, John.
John, here we are on the anniversary, 49 years.
Yeah, and it's wonderful to be here. It's certainly a thrill.
It's certainly a thrill.
If I can get by with a little help from a friend.
Amen on that, brother. We need that. But it's great. It's great to have you guys on. We've been doing this for quite a while now, and every time we do the show, I learn something, and I really appreciate having you guys on. So I just want to tell you guys thank you. And it's just a great friendship that we've built, and it's just so much fun to talk music. And and it's like it's always fun. We hit a different topic, and we sometimes get deeper than other times. But there's no better topic than the Beatles, and there's no better topic than this album, because the album, you can ask different people. I mean, there are guys, John and David, who believe that Revolver is their greatest album, and they will debate, you know, that it's actually a more groundbreaking album than Sgt. Pepper, and that without Revolver, there'd be no Sgt. Pepper, which I agree with. And I do love Revolver, but what do you think it is that separates Sgt. Pepper from any of the other work that you've heard? Because as we mentioned, guys, it's been number one in all the lists of all the greatest rock albums of all time. What do you think? Let's start with David. What do you think, David, classifies it or makes it that special?
John, in my opinion, at the time, the Beatles were tired of touring. Basically, they was ready to go into the studio and do stuff. But I think they wanted to identify themselves with a different name and band, which was Paul's idea. And original name for that band, instead of a Star Trek, John Lennon brought up Colonel Tucker and his Medicine Brew Band, and that just didn't play in with it. But that's what John Lennon wanted originally. But I think what makes this album so iconic, how you had the mixture of psychedelica, you had the mixture of what would influence Pink Floyd quite a bit, the sound of big symphony orchestras, you had electric guitars, drums, Eastern mystic music, and you blend all these together on one album and makes it so iconic. And there's no really one step on that album I can really say there's a song I don't like. And there's many albums that there can be a favorite band of mine. There's still one or two weak songs on them. There's nothing weak on this thing, and it makes you think. When I listen to Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, I always think of that wonderful place and everything. And then one of my favorite songs on the whole album is Good Morning, and I play that every morning when I get up anyway because it gets me started. But I just say it influenced so many other bands, and also it destroyed so many bands. Dave Clark of the Dave Clark Five, John, made the comment one time that once we heard Sgt. Pepper, because they tried to duplicate it, they couldn't. And I think, to me, it's probably the greatest classical album. I count it as a classical album as well as a rock album. To me, it will always be number one. And like I said, if you just want to sit back and listen to what the Beatles really were, this captures it to me.
That's a great answer. How about you, John?
John, when I think of Sgt. Pepper, and the reason I think it's had ranked number one so many times, I think of the influence that it had on so many artists. But I also think of what led to Sgt. Pepper. The Beatles really sort of dissected some kind of diverse other artists. I mean, they looked at Pet Sounds of the Beach Boys and what they were doing, as well as the Mothers of Invention with Frank Zappa would freak out. I mean, talk about, you know, weird influences, and they kind of take a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And then as they evolved, you can't help but go back to Rubber Soul that had what I call the acoustic sound. They started getting serious with their lyrics. Now let's go into more of a rock sound with Revolver. And as it keeps evolving, here's this album that I can't really classify as the acoustic sound that we heard so much in Rubber Soul, or maybe pure, more pure rock in Revolver, but it sure has a bit here and a bit there, and I think it showed all four members of the band what kind of different taste they had in music. And I think it, you know, although we've heard the Beatles say in different interviews, I think it might have been the last album that they were really working well together, because they had been away from each other for a couple months when they had stopped touring. I think they were enjoying each other's company again. When they did that last concert on August 29th, 1976 at San Francisco, they were out of the public eye for several months there. They just wanted time off, time away. And it wasn't until really, I think, late November, maybe early December, 76, they decided, well, you know, maybe it's time to get back and look at the studio. And a lot of the critics at that time thought that the Beatles had peaked. And they based this on, like, there was some of the middle-of-the-road artists, easy listening, starting to do their songs, and they thought they had lost their edge. And, you know, lo and behold, they're kind of like sort of a guy who would be like a criminal on Batman. They're sort of having their hands, and they're sort of, and they got them sort of rubbing together and thinking, we got something in surprise for you. You just wait in a couple of months. And then, you know, here comes this 45 of Strawberry Fields Forever and Penny Lane, and that was just the start of things to come. Then, boom, June 1st, here comes the Sgt. Pepper album.
Yeah, that's interesting, too, how Strawberry Fields, you were talking, David, about Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Now, Strawberry Fields is one of those songs that, you know, think about that. I mean, they wrote that in Penny Lane, and those were two songs that went back to their childhood. And how that they, what you would think, on any album in the world, you would find a place for those, right? I mean, anybody. But in that situation, those were two singles that didn't make the album. And I would love to have been a fly on the wall when they were talking about that. It's like, okay, those are really, really good songs, better than any song anybody else has probably done. But we're doing a concept album. We're going to put these songs in together. Do you think that had something to do with the guys, the fact that it was connected with the, you know, with the beginning of Sgt. Pepper's and the reprise at the end, and then it had, you know, like kind of things kind of flowed together, and the production of the album was meticulous? And what do you think about that? I mean, it's can collect a lot of songs, but yeah, this was something a little different, special.
Well, they told John, they told George Martin. George Martin was shocked at what they wanted to do at the time, and he said, "You sure you boys want to do this?" He knew they were going into experimental ground here more than what George expected. But what Paul, when John wanted to capture, is this is imaginary band. They wanted to be introduced. They didn't want to be connected as the Beatles, and so Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And so they captured that sound, and if you listen to a lot of the songs, there's the key element in all these songs. A few of them had represented, I think, what John was thinking, what Paul was thinking. One of the best songs that captures Paul's way about singing is Getting Better. When you hear that song there, you can't help but like it, and the reason why Paul wrote that, when Jimmy Nichols was a substitute drummer for the Beatles, when Ringo was sick in 64, Paul and John would go up to him. He says, "How you come along?" He said, "It's getting better every day." And Paul said he could never get that out of his head. And like I said, it was so iconic, this album is to me, that when they decided to have a 3D cover. Well, at the time, it was going to cost way more money than what they could have to have a 3D cover. And so they dropped the idea altogether. And then it was 5 months later, the Rolling Stones Santanic managed the request, got the 3D cover on the Beatles. But already the Beatles had talked about 3D covers. They's really, to me, and John will agree with me with this, I think they was experimenting, but it could have went the other way. And if it hadn't worked for them, you just wonder what would have happened, but it, which it didn't.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. And I'd just like to say to the people listening tonight, if you'd like to call in, we have a toll-free line that you can call in on, and it's 877-694-5613. And you can call in and ask John and David a question. You can try to stump the Timmons brothers with a question about Sgt. Pepper. And if you do call, I believe there is you can hit a number on the – I haven't called it because I'm on this end of it. But then it'll let me know that you have a question. So if you do that – and we do have a caller. So let's get the caller, guys, and see what kind of question they will have for you. Hi, caller. You're on John Talk Radio.
Yes. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Oh, real good. Real good. Ready to talk to JT.
He's right here.
Right here.
You know who this is, JT?
No, I don't.
Come on now.
I'm not sure. Is it Fig?
It's Figgy Stardust.
Okay, I didn't know. Okay.
How's Figgy Stardust doing?
He was good. I think I had to, you had me a little moment. I was a little confused, but yes, this is Figgy Stardust. Okay.
How's it going, Figgy? You got a question for John and David?
Yeah. You know, the A Day in the Life is in the Guinness Book of World Records. Do you know why they're in there?
Dave, do you want to take that one or you want me to?
I'll let you have that one.
I'm going to guess, Fig, that it deals with the great engineering work of Jeff Emmerich, where he kept raising the volume for that final note and make it last as long as it could, and it kept going on and on, and I can't remember how many seconds it was, but I'm going to guess it was the last single note of a song that has the most as far as length and time.
And you are good. You are good.
I'm going to guess.
That's right.
I thought was going to say the same thing. And all them pianos, though, that's always been amazing to me, though. But, you know, the one person that recorded that song that shocked me, Figgy, was Ed Ames. And he wasn't playing Mingo at the time. And he actually sung on Daniel Boone.
Really?
And I remember Daniel says, one day Mingo might make a hit in the future.
Wow.
So yeah, he did sing on Daniel Boone.
It said that George Martin was in on that note. He and one of the other Beatles hit the note at the same time. And
John Lennon.
Yeah,
John
Lennon. That's why... That was the longest sustained note in music history or something like that.
And Fig, while we're on this, I don't know if you're about the import, but if you buy the import as compared to the American version, the import has, if you listen to it long enough, a bunch of little silly laughing and just a bunch of sounds for about 3 seconds, and then it ends. And I don't think you get that when you bought the American the way it ends.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question, Figgy. I like that. Yeah, that was good and everything. And tell Major Tom I said hi.
Oh, I will. I will do that. Yeah. So I just wanted to call in and say hi to you guys and hope you're all doing well.
Figgy,
well, thanks
you
for calling
care,
in,
buddy.
Figgy. We appreciate it.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. Now, with that sustained note, guys, it's a piano note, right? Was that sustained because of the recording of it, or was it just they captured it? Because you can make something sound if you record it, you know what I mean, on the board, make it sound different. I don't know that what happened there. Was it just that they had the right acoustics that made that sound stay that long? I mean,
what they did, they took these in Abbey Road Studios that day, and they cleared the whole thing out. And, John, I think I'm right on this. Didn't they clear out the whole thing, John? And they'd already recorded some pianos, hadn't they, John?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Yeah, and then George Martin, and of course, John Lennon, he was determined to do this. But when you hear that and it catches that note,
it's just so
iconic, that note is, when you hear that and everything. But what I liked about that song, The Day of Life, and I got to bring this up, because since Iggy's brought this up, I got to bring it up. The British radio stations would not play that song. It was going to be the only single from Sgt. Pepper, but there's one word in there. When Paul said he took a smoke, the BBC took it the wrong way, and it didn't get to be a single. And so maybe, but that song was only meant for Sgt. Pepper. I don't think that could have been on any other Beatle album myself.
Well, yeah, that's a pretty interesting point there too, David, because of the sensitivity of the drug culture. So that's probably what that was, right? It was smoke and
like
marijuana.
And then on May, I think it was May 19th, 1979, it was Eric Clapton's wedding with Patty Boyd. It was George, Ringo, and Paul with Eric Clapton. They did play the Sgt. Pepper song at his wedding. And that's the last time that actually any Beatles would perform that. And I know Paul does it separately now on his tours, but there was actually three-fourths of the Beatles was there to play it that day at the wedding. Boy, I'd like to have been a fly on the wall and heard it that day, though. It'd been neat.
Yep. I wonder if that was recorded.
I have a feeling somebody probably did.
Yeah, let's hope that that comes up sometime, because there's so many things out there that people recorded, and maybe it's just in their personal library or something like that. But my guest is John and David Timmons. We're talking about the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper, the legacy of an album. If you would like to call in and speak to John and David, use the toll-free number 877-694-5613 in the U.S., and if you're outside of the U.S., you got to just call in on 646-595-2483, and I hope you have long distance, because it's the only toll-free number we have is within the U.S. So we appreciate everybody supporting this show for the years. And also, we'd just like to talk about John and David. You have the Timmons Rock Show coming up, the trivia show on June 11th in 160 East Main Street in Mount Sterling, Ohio, in the community center. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, John, this is a show that's become kind of an annual sort of a ritual that we do in Mount Sterling. Most of the time we do shows that are on college campuses or at a conference, so to be the entertainment, things like that. And this is a show that we do because this is our roots, our hometown. We like to come back for it. And the show that this one's coming up is actually one of the shows that we do for free. There would not be any, as far as any admission, and we have some new categories we've even added this year for the music. We're still doing our decades. You can pick a decade for Audio Stumper, but we've added two new categories. Added one called Beach Music, and another one will be one for Classic Country. We've had so many people say, could you put a little bit of country on there? So we're going to put just a little bit. It's still going to be, you know, the main guiding force will be rock and roll, but just like a little new approach. We got some interesting categories.
Ernest meets David Bowie.
And I'll let Dave talk about, because he adds a lot of spice of fun in it.
I'm going to have fun with classic country. I just know it. I'm even going to wear a cowboy hat when we do them.
Wow.
But John, this was John's idea to bring up classic country. So we've had people, the board, I'm really excited about, John, though. This is the first time we've had heavy metal as a category.
Huh?
And I've had some metal heads come to the show, and I want them to come now. They've been complaining I hadn't had no heavy metal for them. We're going to have some.
Well, you're gonna have classic country and heavy metal, and you have the different questions, and then you know you ask the audience, and it's a lot of fun. It's friendly competition, and you see, you know, like people light up when they hear a song. It reminds them of something. So you know there is a place for classic country. I'm not a big country fan myself, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, I'm just one person, so, but a lot of people do have grown up with country music and really, really like it. Even the Beatles were fans of country music, especially Ringo.
Yeah, Yeah, of course, he was a big Buck Owens fan, and when Johnny Russell was always going to put me in the movies, the Beatles actually went to see Buck Owens twice in 65. A lot of people don't know this. They liked a guitar player named Don Rich, and they would come to hear him. And if you listen to George Harrison's guitar lines on Put Me in the Movie, it sounds a lot like the way Don Rich played it did. So the influences are there. So that part there was always amazed me about it. But like I said, it should be an interesting show. And like I said, I'll probably be quiet and bashful like I always am at the show.
Oh, yeah, we hardly know you're there.
and John, I'd like to give credit to the library and Mouse Storing. They work with us as partners with this to be a sponsor of it. And my understanding is they're going to have quite a few prizes to give out.
That's
going to be done
nice.
To the library. So that'll really be nice. So not only is it free admission, you got the possibility of various type of prizes that they've been collecting the last couple of weeks.
Well, that's great. And it's a very nice family atmosphere. You can bring your kids. You can, come and bring grandma and grandpa.
Oh, a great
kids.
It's a great G show. And like I said, that's why I tell bring any of my grandma. We have one lady that came here, was it last year, John, was 86?
Yeah, she was dancing in the front row for a little bit.
Yeah, dancing in the front row.
Yeah.
Great. And so it makes you feel good at how. And I know we're getting off the subject, but John and I have this belief music has a way to overcoming things. It makes a person for a couple hours forget their problems. Just have a unity of fun. Like you described, John, it just gets everybody together. And if we can do that for 2 hours, we're doing our job. And sometimes at the universities, when we do them in places, then one person says, "Are you like the Energizer Rabbit?" I said, "Yeah, but I only got 3 batteries left."
Oh, that's funny. Well, we do have another. I'm not sure if they have a question or not, but we have do have another caller. Let's see if they have a question. If not, then they can just not talk, and we'll keep going. Okay, you're on John Talk Radio. Do you have a question for John and David?
Yes.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yes, I was just enjoying the show, and one thing that made Sergeant Pepper so groundbreaking and also so successful is that the Beatles had a rare gift for being radically experimental and commercially accessible at the same time. That's a delicate balance that not just anyone can pull off. But
that's a really good one.
You brought up a good point there, sir. That's what I was talking about earlier, and I said they were taking a big chance with this. Some bands could have not handled what they did, but I like what J.D. brought up about Revolver. You could tell they were metamorphosing into this.
Definitely.
And like I said, to me, it's so amazing how they could put this together, and we're still talking about it 49 years later.
Yeah.
Now you take a group like the Grassroots. Now we don't even talk about anything about them 49 years later. So that's I shouldn't use them for example, but it's true. But you basically you brought up a good point there. What do you think of that, John?
They were taking a big risk because, as you were saying, they were kind of radical with this because up to now they'd been releasing singles, been touring, and that'd been the formula way you did things in 1966 in rock and roll. You don't just skip out of touring when you're on top of the world for 5-6 months and you don't release any new product. And we talked earlier about Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields Forever. The reason they came out because Capitol Records and Brian Epstein, their manager, did not want to wait till June. We said, "You guys need to get something out. You need to be in the limelight, put something together." And Brian Epstein approached George Martin. "What do you got?" He goes, "Well, I only got 2 of the 3 are probably the best thing they've ever done." "Oh, okay. I think I'll take it."
Exactly. You can kind of do that when you were at that creative. Now, do you have a specific question you'd like to ask?
Yes. With that in mind, with the experimentation plus the commercial accessibility, there's been a lot of talk about the Beach Boys' Smile project. If that album had come out on schedule, if they hadn't canceled Smile, if it had come out before Sgt. Pepper, would it have been the game changer that Sgt. Pepper ended up being, or was it not quite commercially accessible enough? Was it just a little too far out in left field, like the Mother's Freak Out, you know, radically experimental but not commercially acceptable at the time?
Well, I can explain about the Beach Boys. What happened with the Beach Boys during the Smile Project? It was their manager and the Beach Boys' father that kept them from finishing this. He wanted them to keep having hits. He said, "You guys are having hits." And, of course, with Pet Sounds, they had quite a few 45s out of it. And I think if he had stayed out of it, and I think with Brian Wilson's songwriting ability, which he took Smiles on tour with him, and it is a great concept album, I agree with you. Would the Sgt. Pepper have been as iconic? I still think it would have. But I think it would have been showing what the Beach Boys could do. But I think the Beach Boys were trapped at that time, and John maybe won't agree with me. I think they were still trapped in the surfing image and the cars yet. And that's my opinion. I don't want my brother.
No, I think the caller is right on target. We won't know. I think the concern was how accessible would it be from a commercial standpoint. And because you know, Mike Love and Brian Wilson had this tug of war of Mike Love wanted to do, hey, the song's about girls, bikes, beach, and Brian wanted to take another direction. So, but it's one of those what if questions that's really interesting to think about.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think one of the things with the Beach Boys, and you talked about being commercially accepted, and then were they experimentationally accepted? And Caller, you have a lot of background noise. I don't know if you could mute anything. But I think one of the – I don't know if the radio is going on in the background, but if you could mute something.
Yeah. Yes. What if I move away from it?
Yeah, that might work.
There you go.
If we look at it, the fact that Mike Love wanted it to be commercial, he wanted to make that money, he wanted to be on the road, he wanted all those things, John Timmons, that you said that the Beatles said they weren't going to do. He said, let's release singles, let's get on the road, let's get out there. And the Beatles were saying, no, let's don't get out there, let's don't go on the road, let's don't release singles, let's change everything. Let's put an album out there that will go from, like, change the music industry. A lot of people don't talk about that as much because it changed from the single-oriented music to the album-oriented music. Now you had this incredible work of art in front of you, and you had – we haven't even talked about the cover of Sgt. Pepper. I mean, you could spend days just looking at that. What album was like that, you know? And David, you talked about the Rolling Stones coming out with their 3D cover and – weren't they always like a day late and a dollar short, though?
Yes.
I mean,
well, here's the key thing I want our caller to listen to about the Rolling Stones. I want him to listen to Satanic Majesty's Request. There's one song called 20,000 Light Years from Home. The key element in this song, John Lennon and Paul McCartney is on this song. And if you look at the album cover of Satanic Majesty's Request, all four of the Beatles are on little Christmas ornaments. All,
yes,
but you
know,
gotta
the
look
bottom
very
of the
close
picture.
For it. Yeah, you gotta look very close. And I agree with JD. The Rolling Stones were always one step behind the Fab Four, and I think that has always killed Keith Richards this day. my nephew got to meet Keith Richards. I said, I'm glad he didn't mention that to him. but
you know,
no,
there's
an
Indian-oriented song on Satanic Majesties called Gomper that was, I believe, influenced by Within You, Without You.
Yeah.
Yes, you're very right.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Brian
I think
Jones
that
played sitar on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was always interesting to me to see how the Beatles would break loose this. You know, they would come out of like this big giant flower just popping out. Then all these different musicians, and you mentioned to John Timmons how that they would all be scurrying to try to copy it or duplicate it or even get close to it. It was like, I find that just amazing. And I don't think that's going on today in music. I don't even know of too many albums, maybe you could count them on both of your hands, that have had that much impact on society since that, Sgt. Pepper. Do you think there have been any albums, guys? I'll ask all three of you. Any albums that have had that kind of impact since Sgt. Pepper?
Well, the only one I can think of is U2's Shake, Rattle, and Hum. And to me, I don't know if anybody else agrees with me on that. I like the album, but I can't think of anything though. It really do. It's out there. Maybe the closest would probably be 1984 when Pink Floyd made The Wall, maybe. But then it's not iconic like that. What do you think, John?
Oh, I really cannot think of an album that had the kind of influence of Sgt. Pepper. I mean, the fact that all the major artists of the day, the people they care about, your peers, they took note and really wanted to listen to it. I mean, what says more than Jimi Hendrix's album comes out, I think, on a Friday, and they go, and he's in England, he's performing songs from it on Sunday, you know, and here was Hendrix at this period when everybody was just admiring what he could do with his axe, with his guitar, but what was he doing that weekend? He was learning all the Sgt. Pepper songs so he could perform some of them live.
Remember the comment Mark Lindsay made of Paul Revere and the Raiders, John? Remember, he takes the Sgt. Pepper album to Uncle Paul, and Paul says, "What in the hell can we do for this?" And it said broke a lot of bands up. Some bands from that point on were never able to continue. And I can think of bands like the Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas just disappeared. Jerry and the Pacemakers, they all just got disappeared because they couldn't duplicate. And it's hard to duplicate something when you got four musical geniuses like the Beatles.
Yeah, exactly. And not even duplicate. They were thinking, okay, if this is the way music's going to go, we're not even on the same path. We're not even close to what this is, because it's intellectually it was stimulating. It was, you hear A Day in the Life, you can't absorb all of it, guys, in one sitting. You have to listen to it more than once.
And you
were talking, John Timmons, about people that heard it for the first time. You know, we would like people, if you haven't listening to the show tonight and you can remember when you first got the record and you heard it. I can remember that. And I can remember hearing A Day in the Life and thinking, this is something I've never heard anything like this before.
I remember when I first got it in 1967, I played it straight through, paused long enough to catch my breath, and then played it straight through again. And I still have that same vinyl copy.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Well, did you keep all the cutout stuff and everything from the album?
Still have the cutouts.
Great.
And
great.
The inner sleeve, the fancy inner sleeve.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
awesome.
Did
you look on the back where they make, remember when the Paul is dead thing, remember the big blue picture of Paul and he's staring at the other ones, and that's when he first started all that too.
Let me ask the caller, because the caller sounds like he knows a lot. He's a big, obviously bought it when it came out. What is the song that you most like, that just to like it, not necessarily for influence from the Sgt. Pepper album? Is there any particular song that really jumps out you the first time you heard it, you liked it, 100 times later you still like it?
The whole album, really, but you know, A Day in the Life was a big one, really.
Mm-hmm.
And there were just so many different styles, such a variety on that album, and you know, the experimentation, and like, I mean, back to Revolver, first time I heard Tomorrow Never Knows in 1966, it scared me to death. I'd never heard anything quite like it before.
Yeah. Wow.
But it was brilliant.
Good point.
Well, I'm glad to hear somebody originally had it and bought it that time, and so that'd be interesting for you, Dan.
Mm.
Yeah, that is really cool. I can remember... I didn't buy it when it first came out, but my buddy did, and I went over to his house and listened to it. and I can remember that being a pretty cool situation. But why don't we play A Day in the Life? And my guest is John and David Timmons, and we're talking about the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper, the legacy of an album. We're going to play A Day in the Life. This is one of the iconic songs from Sgt. Pepper. We'll be right back after
Thanks
this.
For calling. Thanks for calling for play.
Thank you.
And we're back with John and David Timmons. Our
well,
subject
I had to drag a coma back from my hair there real quick on that one. You know, John, I have to bring this up right now.
What did I just say earlier?
Yeah. There it was. You know, though, when we heard that song, John and Paul, collaboration on that song, that is what makes that song so much to me. It took popular music, rock and roll music, you mixed the two together, and we can still listen to that song, even it's been decades ago, and you still have goosebumps when you hear that song. It's just that type of a song, and it just amazes me how that song can still do that to a person. I just wish Martha Hoople had been able to do that. I'd get him.
You know, I was waiting for you to bring Martha Hoople.
Yeah, I knew it was going to. Just
like
a matter of time.
But I totally agree with you, David, on that song. I listened to it. I feel like 49 years ago when I heard it, I couldn't completely believe it when I heard it then. It was like when the caller said something about it, it scared them. I've heard people say that before about music, like with Hendrix and with the Beatles and music that they hadn't heard before. It was like opening up an old chest and something coming out that was just totally different. And when you heard it, you were thinking, well, I thought, where did this come from? I don't even understand it. And I think that's what music will do. And I think John Lennon, at that point in his creativity, was thinking, you know, I think he was kind of looking down a little bit at some of the music, at some of the songwriters. And they were
good description of that, yeah.
Doing things over and over and over again. And he was kind of thinking to himself, why don't we do something different? Why don't we tap into a different area? Now, I'm not going to get into how he tapped into a different area, or that can be controversial, and I'm not going to say he did or he didn't, but there was that going into a frontier, into a place that wasn't comfortable, a place that people – John, you said it perfectly when you were talking about the guys were – the money guys were saying, now, wait a minute, we got to put out a single. We got a tour. This is our formula. And now these guys are saying, oh, I don't think so. We're going to do
something that's going to completely blow your mind. I like one gentleman brought up about the Beach Boys. That's where the Beach Boys were trapped. They liked to tour. And I like what John said about Mike Love and Brian Wilson. And that went, it goes on to this day. They have to tour separate. But the point of it is, that's the difference between the Beatles and the Beach Boys. The Beatles got away with it, and that's the key thing. And, hey, John, but when I do John's class, I always go down. He does the Beatle class and lecture on Sgt. Pepper. Well, one of the girls did tell me this. She said, every time I hear the benefit of Mr. Kite, it gives me the creeps because of the merry-go-round music. John, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I love the merry-go-round music.
I do remember that.
Yeah, and, but that's what makes this album so good. And here we can talk about every song. It'll soon be 50 years next year. And just like it's a new album, it seems like every time you play it.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it seriously is.
I was going to say, I was reading that at the time the New York Times would have their critics evaluate certain songs and music, and they said really up until 1967 they would not even critique any of the Beatles' music because they considered it just a bunch of popish music and it didn't deserve, you know, its print. And suddenly Sgt. Pepper came out, and that was the first album they reviewed, and they actually held it as ahead of its time and has a trendsetter. So you're talking going from wouldn't even acknowledge their music to just giving this kind of a raving review.
And then when John Lennon makes this comment, the English Army had just won the war. Remember, he's working on that movie too, How I Won the War, one of the strangest movies I ever watched. I still can't figure it out. But he was working on that movie at the same time. And I think that's why he threw that little pitch into that song.
It's just, yeah, it's an incredible song. It's an incredible album. We're talking to John and David Timmons. And if you want to go to the Mount Sterling Community Center in Ohio next Saturday on June the 11th from 2 to 4, they'll be putting on their rock and roll trivia show. And it's at 160 East Main Street in Mount Sterling, Ohio at the Community Center. So that would be a lot of fun. Marcy and I will be there. And we'll be all geeked up with our monkey outfits on and ready for the big monkey show that next week. So we
well,
do
tell
have.
tell Marcy this, John. I got to tell this. Michael
She's
Nesmith
probably
actually. Yeah, Michael Nesmith actually sat in on some of the Sgt. Pepper sessions, and maybe he wanted to hear what a real band sound like. I could have been the only thing I could.
Ooh.
I'm asking for it.
Well, I don't think anyone would argue that. We do have another caller. Let's see what this. Hello, caller. Area code 803. Do you have a question for John and David?
I do. Hello, JT and David. This is Allison.
Hey,
oh,
Allison.
Hi, Allison. Good hearing from you.
Yeah.
Good to hear you too. Two things. Listening to the inner groove, that cacophony of noise that comes in at the end of a day in life when you're not ready for it is
right.
It's the worst and the best.
Many a time
I've accidentally jumped out of my skin.
And you know, the thing about it, because at the time, if people were always looking for some kind of a controversy, and people even tried to play it backwards even back then, thinking there must be a hidden message and all that nonsense. And, I mean, there was people just wasting hours of nights trying to figure it out. And you're right, it was just a bunch of, well, you know, I mean, John Lennon was really notorious. All I could do is listen to the lyrics of I Am the Walrus, you know. I mean, he could just take some words and put them together, and like he said, just what, you know, and so then you speed it up, who knows how many RPMs, but I didn't even know about that till years later after it was released. I did not know there was such an ending.
See, yeah. Allison, here's another key thing too, and I brought this up. I remember when I was taught in your class that time. Beatles was the first group to do backtracking. Everybody thinks it was Led Zeppelin. The Beatles were experimenting that long ago, and I got a quote. This is what Paul McCartney quoted about this song. We could go anywhere with this song. It was definitely going in to go big places. And I tried to play it backwards one time, and it's kind of sound like the Beatles sound like the Chipmunks. I didn't like it too well.
Chipmunk Beatles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Allison, do you have a question for John and David?
Not really a question, although I did read somewhere that the Inner Groove, I guess this was on the UK album since it, Inner Groove's not on the US version apparently, but on the UK album, apparently the Inner Groove would play continuously. It was a literal loop until you got up and turned the record player off.
Can you imagine the kind of insanity that would create hearing that over and over?
You know, hey, Allison, you was in the class that day, and I forget which one of the young ladies that I was talking about mentioned the benefit of Mr. Kite, and she said the merry-go-round music was creepy. And I said, I said, I love to hear that merry-go-round music on that song, and you're right on the UK version. The EMI version, there's several different. If you listen to Benefit of Mr. Kite, they referred to Henry the Horse twice on the UK version, and he had to be quite a dancer if they referred to him twice. That's the only thing I can figure out.
A question I have for you, Allison, before you go is, when did you first hear the little track there called The Inner Groove?
It had to have been when I first heard the album all the way through.
Okay.
So that was probably when I was 16, 17, probably.
Okay. So you when you first heard it, that's the way you heard it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had heard a Little Help from My Friends and When I'm 64 on the radio before that.
Uh-huh.
I'd known about those songs for a long time, but I didn't listen to the whole album all the way through until I was in my late teens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But one thing about the album that's really interesting is that even though they've got various sounds going on, I mean, they've got the psychedelic, they've got Paul doing his kind of music hall thing, and then there's George with his pure Indian within You Without You, but it all links together very well. There's not anything that sounds disjointed.
Everybody always forgets about Ringo. He's always the one that never gets any credit.
Well, of course, I can't forget about Ringo. I mean, he's my favorite. But I mean, but I do think that with A Little Help from My Friends, it fits nice in with Paul's music hall style.
Good point. Good point.
Right.
Now, how do you rate that? Now, Allison, you listen to all the Beatle albums. I know you was in John's class. But how do you rate Sgt. Pepper of all the Beatles albums you've listened to? Now, do you rate that number one, or do you have a favorite beyond that?
Well, personally, my favorite is Revolver.
Okay.
When I had the opportunity to actually get the reprints, but they had I was in Second and Charles, and they had LPs of the albums there, and I got Revolver as my first one.
Okay.
I would say, you know, objectively, not without personal bias, I would say Pepper is probably the best. But personally, favorite, it comes in probably two or three.
Oh, that's still on the top. As many albums they put out, I like I said, I like that because I like to see how different generations judge this album. And I guarantee, Allison, when we're long gone, somebody's going to be listening to this in 2070. It's just that iconic to me.
But I do have a funny story. I have a friend who shares my great appreciation for George, and we were in the car, and she had Within You, Without You on her iPod, and she hooked it up into the radio. And we were both, Within You, Without You, George, love George. And my other friend does not quite have the same appreciation, and she's just, this
oh,
is
George
trippy
George.
And freaking
you know
me out a little
his
bit.
Guitar gently
weep.
You know his guitar gently weeps when you don't like him.
You know, there's a good point to be made about that, because when we talked a little bit about some of the things that were in the music of the Beatles, and the outside world would look at it and they would judge them maybe for some drug lyrics or things related, like, you know, go upstairs and take a smoke and things like that, and John wants to turn everybody on. Of course, everybody started thinking that. But the thing that I think is very interesting, Allison and guys, is the fact that George did that with religion. He didn't trip people out with drugs. He tripped people out with Hinduism, with the mystical music. And it was one of those things where, you know, there wasn't any real judgment on that. There were people listening to it, but like your friend, were thinking, this is another path that I've never been down.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so we're going down this one into LSD and whatever on this side. Now George is taking us into this mystical place of transcendental meditation, of the sitar music, of this mystical way of life, which in the Western world hadn't been in popular music, I don't believe. What do you guys think of that?
Oh, that's a good point, because when you listen to the George and that sitar, and you referred how his religion, all you got to do is listen to his solo projects,
mm-hmm.
My Sweet Lord. He not only does Christianity, he also covers the Hare Krishnas, he covers the Hindus, and it goes all the way through, and he gets his point across. And the same way if Without You, the first time I heard that one time, I thought Brian Jones could play a sitar, and I said he couldn't even keep up with George Harrison. So, and I like what Allison talked about. I said, when you listen, the other song I like, is inner light, it captures that same kind of atmosphere.
Yes, it does.
Right. It was George going down a path of self-discovery. And he was going into the Hindu world, and he was into Hare Krishna. And it was something that I thought was almost freaked people out as much as it did the drugs. John Timmons, what do you think of that? I mean, this road of, okay, everybody knows that you know, it's taboo to go down the drug path, but how about this Eastern religion? How about this? This is different than what we're used to. And John Lennon said the things about Jesus that, you know, upset everybody. Now you've got George taking us down this Eastern religion path. What do you think the impact of that was on society, too, that this album kind of portrayed?
Oh, yeah, John, I think the fact you said the word Eastern, I mean, you're talking Western music and talk about just Eastern in itself, and then George is able to intertwine it into rock and pop, and we're sort of familiar with this sound, but it's much different. Like the one the other caller said earlier, it was almost frightening, almost scary, probably the first time people heard it in 1967. Here we hear from Allison probably just in recent years, somebody like, well, that's really different, you know. I mean, when it can have that kind of impact 40-some years later, I mean, that says something.
Yeah, when somebody hears it 50 years later and thinks it's spooky and scary and different, and it's been around for that long, that's a great testimony of the creativity of the album.
Not even the Banana Splits could do that.
No, they couldn't. They tried. But they
could. It was Cooper.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know how. Yeah, the Banana Splits were into Eastern religion and LSD and all that. But let's play a song. Let's play A Lucy in the Sky, and this should get some conversation going.
Oh, great! I love this song.
Yeah, I do too. My favorite Beatles song is I Am the Walrus. I can't get it out of my head when I hear it. I think it's so different. I think it is one of those songs that just blows me away when I listen to it, because the music is so ahead of everything. But Lucy in the Sky was also pretty revolutionary at that point. We're talking, guys, 1966, 1967. Think about what was going on back then. Think of what people were dressed like. People were thinking, what they were doing, how conservative the country was, how everything was just kind of the way let's leave it to Beaver. Let's have it this way. Let's do this. Everything had to be just in a certain path. Now you've got these guys coming at you, going right at the youth's mind. You know, that's what a lot of people didn't like about it. They were attacking the intellectual minds of all these kids, and they were doing it through music. And let's play Lucy in the Sky, and there's all kinds of things about it, but let's play that, and then we'll come back and talk about it. My guest is John and David Timmons. You can go on their website, timmonsrock.com, and we'll be right back after Lucy in the Sky. This is John Talk Radio.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. with plasticine pauses, with looking glass ties. Suddenly someone is there at the turnstile, the girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. 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 Lucy in the sky with
I'm fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wandering where it will go. I'm filling the cracks that ran through the door and kept my mind from wandering where it will go.
Welcome everyone back to John Talk Radio. Special guest is John and David Timmons. Timmons Brothers, rock historians, and you can hear them live. You can see them live, hear them, see them next week, June 11th, at the Mount Sterling Community Center, 160 East Main Street, from 2 to 4 o'clock, their trivia show. And you can also go on their website at timmonsrock.com. If you have a question for John and David, you can use our toll-free number, which is 877-694-5613. I believe we do have a caller. Hello, do you have a question for John and David?
Yes, I do, actually. I have sort of a comment and a question. You were talking earlier about the Indian influence on the Beatles music and that the Beatles may have been the first to use the sitar, which certainly I do think is true in 1965 with Norwegian Wood. But I always have to defend my good buddies, the Kinks, who actually a few months before Norwegian Wood came out on December 3rd, and July 30th, they released a song, See My Friends, which was
I love this song.
Partially,
I'm a Kinks fan too. Yes.
And that was influenced by Ray Davies' visit to India.
Yeah,
so,
see my friends down by the river.
No.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great point. And there was so much great music coming out at that time. But I also, you know, I do agree with that. What do you think it was that was different about the Beatles' influence with Eastern music? And a lot of groups, like you were saying, there were other bands doing it, but I don't know if they were getting it across as much. I just don't know. What do you think of that?
Right. Well, George Harrison was definitely the first one to use a sitar on a rock record. See My Friends doesn't have a sitar, but it does have sort of an Indian flavor to it.
Do you know another song, too, by the Kinks, Shangri-La?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard that one by the Kinks?
Yeah, so that would have been quite a bit later. Yeah,
quite. You're talking about 67, 68, and that's very interesting.
Yeah, what's your question for John?
Yeah,
Dave?
So I thought I would try to stump the Timmons brothers.
Okay.
I know who this is. So as soon as I heard the Kinks, I was like, okay, Dylan.
Hey, Dylan, you're a dedicated follower of fashion, too.
Oh, I try.
You know, he actually has the birds on his phone doing Chestnut Mare. He's so dedicated to these groups.
Dave and I, we know Dylan. He's been to some of our shows.
He knows he's rock and roll.
When we're in South Carolina, he knows a lot himself. So I'm going with a little bit of intrepidation when he's asking a question.
Anybody that has Chestnut Mare on their phone, you know he's prepared.
Okay, so here's my question. The Beatles recorded 3 additional songs during the Sgt. Pepper sessions that did not make it onto the album. 2 of them you talked about earlier in the show, which were Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields Forever. Do you know what the third? No.
Yes, it was made for the album.
But this song in particular was recorded on February 13th, 1967, right in the heart of the Sgt. Pepper sessions.
Did it appear on an album later?
It did.
February 13th, 1967, and appeared on an album later. Boy, I tell you.
All you need is love.
I'll give you a hint. It's another George Harrison song.
Oh, a Harrison song? Okay.
I know Cross Universe was.
Wait, is it the
album?
One on the Magical Mystery Tour where he looks out
Blue
the
Jay
window?
Way?
No, not that one.
Okay. Okay, that's one I think I was thinking of actually was David.
Yeah,
so
10 seconds, Timmons Brothers.
I know. So it was not on Magical Mystery Tour.
No, it wasn't.
Oh,
if I told you the album, it would make it far too easy.
Okay, I'm just going to take a wild guess because I'm running out of time here. Long.
No, it was actually showed up on the Yellow Submarine album. It was It's Only a Northern Song.
Only a Northern Song.
Dylan, you got right.
Good one, Dylan. Like
yeah,
I said, I knew
song.
When he was on the phone, I was like, he knows his music. I was like,
hey, Dylan, I'm
going to
take away
Chestnut
Mare horse from you now. good question, Dylan. I should have thought that. I made it harder. But I believe Across the Universe was going to be used, and they did not decide to use it.
It was. It showed up on a some kind of a some
on
weird various artist thing, a Family Wildlife album or something. I'm going to have to look up the details on that. But
yeah,
it wasn't. It was never intended for Sgt. Pepper.
But good question, Dylan. It's like I said, it's only a Northern song, though. So.
Dylan,
yeah,
I was all set for you to ask a question about the album cover. I thought it was going to be about that. I really did. I was thinking he's going to try to see if we know who or who's not on the cover. I would.
Yeah. But hey, Dylan, to answer a quick question, what did OPD stand for that Paul McCartney had on his jacket? He always had.
I know the rumor was that it was officially pronounced "dead," which was a Paul dead clue, but I think it was. Actually, was it Ontario Police Department?
Hey, you're good, Dylan. Hey, John, he's ready. He's ready.
and before you go, John, you need to hear this from Dylan. He actually communicates, and I don't know on how much of a regular basis, but you and Mr. Jim Roger McGuinn are pretty tight, right, Dylan?
Yeah, I've emailed him, corresponded with him a few times, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's great.
So,
yeah, he's an amazing, talented musician.
Oh, you know, Dylan is such a Birds fan. Like I said, if you listen to his phone and stuff, hey, Dylan, between the Birds and the Kinks, I noticed also, which one would you rather see in their heyday?
Ooh, that's a tough question for him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do love the Birds, but I think I love the Kinks more. So.
Okay.
Well, okay. Now, just like me, I'd like to see Mott the Hoople on their heyday, and like I said, and the Kinks. I've been God blessed to see the Kinks though with the full band. So, and Dylan, you hang in there if you're dedicated follower fashion.
Dylan, before you go, this makes more sense now because you know George wasn't too excited about Sgt. Pepper because he was kind of like as if he wasn't getting elbowed out before his songs. It was like, you know, Sgt. Pepper came around, and that's why he preferred, I think, Rubber Soul and Revolver, because I think he had more of a say with his songs, in as little as it was. And I'm sure there was some type of tension there that song was not included. You know?
Mm.
Interesting. I did not know that about the Iron Man
order song.
Dale, I got
to tell you one funny story about the Beatles. I was watching The Simpsons one day. And they showed all four of the Beatles, and they're all talking. And Ringo shows John and Paul. He said, "I wrote another new song." He said, "Okay, Ringo, just put on the refrigerator with the rest of them." And they put a magnet on it.
Well,
and I have one funny story. I think it's a good time to bring up for Ringo. And Dylan probably is already aware of this because I'm sure he's read the same thing from Anthology. But Paul, when he was working on With a Little Help from My Friends, he wrote it for Ringo in mind, him and John, and the line that they wanted Ringo to use, but he refused, he wouldn't sing it, was, "What would you do if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and throw tomatoes at me?" And he said, "There's not a chance in hell am I going to sing that line, because it still had lots of really deep memories of kids throwing jelly beans on the stage, and I wasn't about to be bombarded with tomatoes."
That's a little bigger.
I never know that one as well.
The jelly beans.
So, you know, it's like maybe the jelly beans bad enough, but not tomatoes.
Yeah. Well, Dylan, thanks for the question. I have a question to stump the Timmins brothers. Because you said this, John, and got me to think about it. On the cover of Sgt. Pepper, how many Beatles, including images, are... If you could count the Beatles themselves, the images of anybody that was in the Beatles, what would that total number be on the cover of Sgt. Pepper?
Yeah, I want to think it's a trick question here. Let me
I'm going to go with 8.
You know, that's what I was going to say, but I'm thinking maybe I'm overlooking something obvious, but I'm thinking 8 because you got like the early Beatles off to the left kind of staring. And then you got, you know, the four Sgt. Pepper Beatles in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Okay. My final answer, I'm going to agree with Dave's, 8.
Okay. You're the buzzard.
It's 9 because Stu Sutcliffe is in the picture.
Ah,
and he's above the lady with the blue hat.
You're exactly right,
man.
You're exactly right.
Johnny Weissmuller should have yelled these tars and yelled and got him off of there.
And, you know, we could talk for hours about the cover. I mean, it's so incredible.
Oh, hey, John, I'm going to bring this up. Our father was a big cowboy fan of all the old-time cowboys. When I first brought that album home, Mary Johnny picked it up. He said, "Yeah, there's the Beatles." He said, "Well, there's one of my favorite cowboys, Tom Mix, isn't he, John?"
Yep. Yeah, sure did.
He felt that guy's Tom Mix. And,
that's awesome.
That cover. You think about that cover, how iconic it is. And, John, we're all that generation, how important an album was when you bought it. It was you eager to tear off the wrapper, and you were so excited to read the insides and everything. And that was the first album had all the lyrics to the songs in them, and believe it or not. That was the first one for that. And I can remember taking that home and And oh, it's just amazing. I had to wait for my turn for the stereo, though, until Buck Owens got done.
Waited patiently.
You know, John, in many past shows, we've talked about this, how it was a big deal to buy an album, and you'd really make, you know, it would make a special trip, and you would study it. You would look at that label. You would read everything you could. You would look at the pictures. And I have read that Paul McCartney was, his approach was he wanted to be something special because he knew how it was when he was a kid to buy an album that was more than just a plain picture. And he said that he wanted something people could be entertained and get excited about and look forward to. And they went to the store like, this is it. I can't wait to study this. And
right.
A lot of that came in play for such a complicated cover.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's one of those things that makes it so important when you go back and look at them. We were talking to one of the earlier callers about, you know, having the original copy. When I was in had the record store for a short period of time, I think I have three or four of them, and I have a whole bunch of them, but I think I have a couple that are from that original with the sleeve and the whole thing in them, and I just like to, yeah, and I just like to get them and just look at them. And just sit and look at it. And you always see something different in the cover, in the front cover. You always see somebody, oh, who's this? And you know, why are they there? And I guess you guys probably know this. I'm sure you do. But they wanted to put Adolf Hitler on there.
Yeah, they did. And
yeah.
And being the English Blitz, there was no way.
No.
And do we have any guests out there, out of the four Beatles, who would say, hey, how about putting Hitler on the cover?
Lennon.
It was Lennon, of course.
Yeah.
Not to mention Christ. And Paul's like, John's being John. They're not going to go for this.
Well, you remember the John Lennon solo album where he had the Pope? Was the Pope dancing on an album cover, John? You remember that one?
I don't remember
only
that.
John Lennon.
I think it was Sherman Mao and Richard Nixon dancing.
Yeah, that's who was dancing, yes.
Yeah.
And
that's
looks
on
like he's doing a tango.
Yeah.
He was always trying
to
push the envelope, wasn't he?
Exactly. It's like anybody that follows the Beatles, as soon as I said that, you'd be like, all the four, who would most likely say that? And my understanding was that each one of them was to list the people that they would, that they liked, they admired, or in some cases they disliked, and that's how they started with the list, and they went from there. But John was the one that really pushed the envelope, and what was funny, I believe it was Paul was getting at first they were approaching, like, you know, you got a lot of copyright and so on here, you know, you're going to use all these as far as the likeness, all these famous people. And Paul's like, that's okay, we got so many suits going on for our attorneys, let them deal with some more.
Hey, you brought up another point, guys, and remember the Yellow Submarine movie, The Blue Meanies?
Yep.
It was John Lennon that dreamed up the Blue Meanies. The Beatles didn't get much credit for, because the only thing you see them is on the end. But John Lennon wanted to put Blue Meanies in on the Sgt. Pepper album a long time ago. And so it is amazing to me. And if you watch the Yellow Submarine movie, what I love is that animation of John Lennon walking above the stars, and that animation with Lucy in the Sky and Diamonds. It's just like watching a Peter Max picture right in front of you. It's so tough.
Well, is there anything, guys? We got just a little around 5 minutes left. What would you like to say? Yeah, let's start with David. What would you like to say in closing, David, about the album Sgt. Pepper?
Oh, one thing I want to say to anybody out there, if you never buy one rock album, this is the rock album to have in your collection. Not only is it history, it's actually in the museum, and I guarantee you that once you play this album, everybody says rock and roll was a lot of noise, a lot of this. You found out these men were actually talented songwriters and musicians. I count them up there with Beethoven, Mozart, and I think we'll hear more of that down the road. But to me, it'll always be my iconic album, and second will be Meet Mata Hoople. So I got to give a plug in, too. But, John, it is an iconic album, and and it will live forever.
How about you, John?
Well, I've taught a symposium on the Beatles a couple of times, and you heard from Allison there. She was in one of the classes, and something I always bring up with each class is that for Sgt. Pepper, you can't listen to a CD. You can't shuffle the music. To truly appreciate what it stands for, you need to listen to it in the order it was made, because as it was with a side one, a side two, the order of song, because it really captures more of the roller coaster ride that the album can give one, and to really get the full effect. I think so many young people today do not comprehend in its totality how important it is to really just listen, and without any images, not any video, just you and the music. And if you have a turntable and even flip the album over, that's really the best way to hear it the way it was meant to be.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that's something that this younger generation is starting to understand and pick that up, that it's an experience, you know. And music is a trip. It really is.
Yeah,
and it will, you know, you don't need any outside other influences. It will take you into a place you've never been before. John and David, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. You've done a great job, as always, and I really appreciate it. And we'll see each other next weekend. And
glad to see you, John.
Yeah, it's just awesome. We have so much fun doing these shows, and it just it should be illegal. It's so much fun.
I love that.
And John, we want to say thank you for all of your support and getting us out there, and we always look forward to being on your show, because it always sort of stimulates the mind, and we learn some new things too along the way. So
and I can't wait to give you this gift.
It's a great kind of dialogue.
Well, thanks, guys. Go ahead, David.
I can't wait for you. When John and I hand you this one thing, your eyes are going to pop out.
That's
I can say.
I can't wait. That'll be awesome. Well, guys, thanks so much. Thanks everybody out there that listens to the show, that supports independent music, that has supported John Talk Radio. We're going into our ninth year in November. We're finishing up our eighth year and going into our ninth year. And I really couldn't do it without the people out there. It's just a lot of fun to do. And I got to plug one show this Wednesday night. At 8 o'clock on John Talk Radio, Laura Johnston Cole will be my guest. She is a survivor of People's Temple, Jim Jones's cult in 1978. She was one of the people that survived that. She was a member of People's Temple, and I'll have her on my show this Wednesday night. So that should be interesting. Okay, did I shock you guys? Because tell me, isn't that going to be kind of cool to have her on?
I remember when that
Jim,
happened. So, yeah, it will be rather interesting.
See,
yeah.
I teach a course on Jim Jones for the church, and how don't turn bad. So, man, I'm going to listen to that myself.
Yeah, that you can call and ask your questions. Well, thanks, guys. Take care, and we'll talk to everybody later, and I really appreciate it. And we'll talk to everyone. Have a great evening.
Nothing to do to save his life, call his wife in. Nothing to say, but what a day, how's your boy been? Nothing to do, it's up to you. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, yeah.
Going to work, don't wanna go, feeling low down. Heading for home, you start to roam, then you're in town. Everybody knows there's nothing doing, everything is closed, it's like a ruin. Everyone you see is half asleep, and you're on your own, you're in the street. After a while you start to smile, now you feel cool. Then you decide to take a walk by the old school. Nothing has changed, it's still the same. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
scene is full of life. It's time for tea and meet the wife. Somebody needs to know the time. Glad that I'm here. Watching the skirt, you start to flirt. Now you're in gear. Go to a show, you hope she